Welcome to the Badass CEO Podcast. This is Mimi McLean. I'm a mom of five, entrepreneur, Columbia Business School grad, CPA, and angel investor. And I'm here to share with you my passion for entrepreneurship. Throughout my career, I have met many incredible people who have started businesses, disrupted industries, persevered, and turned opportunity into success. Each episode, we will discuss what it takes to become and continue to be a badass CEO, directly from the entrepreneurs who have made it happen. If you're new in your career, dreaming about starting your own business, or already an entrepreneur, the Badass CEO Podcast is for you. I want to give you the drive and tools needed to succeed in following your dreams. Before I get started, I wanted to talk to you about accounting and bookkeeping. As you may know, I'm a CPA, and this is a topic that still makes my stomach turn. However, I found a company that does it all for you at a super reasonable price. They do your bookkeeping and tax returns with ease. I couldn't believe how easy it was to get my books up to date, actually, because they were a little behind, and how inexpensive it was, too. To learn more about it, go to thebadassceo.com/bench. With that link, you receive 30% off your first 3 months. So definitely check them out and save some stress this year. Hi, welcome back to the Badass CEO. This is your host, Mimi McLean. And today I am interviewing Erica Maurer, and she is from EMRG Media, which is a leading meeting, event, and marketing agency. And over the last year, they've become a leader in virtual events as well. She's located in New York City. And in December, Erica successfully produced over 65 virtual events. She's interviewed 3 Shark Tank investors throughout her career, and she has generated over 100 million in events. And we are excited to talk to Erica about being an entrepreneur and starting her event producing company. To get your top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Erica, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. First thing I'd love to know is, like, when you decided you were going to go out on your own and start your own company, EMRG, and I assume it's part of your initials of some sort. No, it's not at all, because it seems like the EM, I thought maybe...
Oh, I know. Everyone says it all the time. My partner's Mario and I'm Erica. So obviously that's like the first assumption, which makes complete sense. But it actually is Event Marketing Resource Group, and we just didn't think it sounded that great. So we like bridged it together.
Oh, good. Well, good. Yeah. You can also say it's your initials with... So you have a partner?
I have a business partner, yes.
Oh, good. So when did you ultimately decide to start your own? I assumed you had experience already in this industry before you started.
So I went to Columbia Business and got my business degree as well as a licensed therapy. And I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I realized that it wasn't. And so I just started to literally learn from every opportunity. I worked in doing fashion events. I worked at agencies. I just kind of wanted to get my hands wet on all different events and what it took to produce like that from start to finish, as well as being able to understand all the business side and kind of bridge it. And that's kind of where that path led me.
Huh. When you say you wanted to get your hands on, were you just working for somebody at that point, or were you already organizing them yourself?
So in grad school, I was able to do an internship, and part of that allowed me to do donor events. So we were able to do like a lot of event for donors, learning how to solicit donations, how do you get a high attendance rate, what you need to do to facilitate the event side. But I realized I liked that. And then I knew I had a lot of different relationships and contacts. So I just started to leverage those and say, hey, do you need help for Victoria's Secret Fashion Week? Or do you need help putting this event together? You need extra hands on the ground. So I ultimately just said, I'll do whatever, anything. No job was too small, nothing, you know, was overlooked and so forth. And I kind of just immersed myself in doing that so that I could learn. And then once I learned all the pieces, I realized that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in charge and have my own business and kind of be able to apply all of those pieces together.
That's great. What year did you graduate at CBS?
2002.
I graduated in 2000. So that's great. It's a great place to go to school because you get to do the internships and stuff while you're there, because you're right in the city. And so what ultimately made you decide to get a partner and to actually formalize having a company?
So I was actually working, he was like one of the bosses I had when I was doing these like side jobs, and I realized that I really liked it. And so he had a partner at the time, and they wound up in essence splitting, and there was an opportunity, and I kind of segued in, and we kind of morphed the business from what it was, which was just basically like events and nightlife and kind of running different properties, to what it is today, which is like a full service events marketing and production agency.
That's great. What has been the biggest struggle? Is it like finding clients? Is it keeping the details together? What do you find is your biggest struggle day to day?
I think it's staff.
Yeah.
I feel like people work differently these days. Kind of like, you know, I grew up with it's whatever it takes is you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And even if it's above and beyond what you were supposed to do, that to me is something that seems to have like a little bit of a disconnect between people now, maybe because there's so many apps that are out that are like, oh, I'll do this or I'll do that. But really just like building a core team is the most important thing. It's also the thing that you need to spend the most time in, that's sometimes overlooked when you're building a business and being able to service clients, right? It's not about how many clients you can get. It's how many clients can you get and keep. So we have this like very long longitude, you know, of clients that keep coming back year after year. And, you know, I think that that has to do with really caring and putting in the time to over deliver.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do that when you find the correct employee, staff, whatever? Is it through the interviewing process that you have to have like a fine tune of like who you're looking for? And is there also like an extensive kind of training to make sure they're hitting your expectation? Like, do you have a standard operating procedure for that to make sure it gets done to the level that you want it to be?
So there's two parts, right? Like you're going to interview people and they're going to say what they think you want. And then mm-hmm. there's actual practical where you see that a lot of what they said is not true, but you already hired them because that's kind of how it goes. And then you have to implement a lot of training. So depending on the level of how far off they are from what they described, you know, there's a training process. How do you do intakes? How do you operate? How do you want people to be responding to emails coming in? What are those steps? And that does take a while. And some people are going to learn quicker mm-hmm. than others. Yeah.
I think that's a common theme, especially now when there's just, it's just hard to get staff, right? And so I think that's a huge common theme. And then there's just a theme that, you know, the younger generation kind of, they know they have more opportunities and they're distracted and they ghost work and they don't show up or everything's just, you know, delayed. It's definitely a different work ethic, I think, than that some of us have been used to growing up, that you just did what it took. I see you also have transitioned to doing more virtual events, obviously during the pandemic, which is great because I think a lot of people were like, I'm a party planner or I'm an events planner and now I have nothing to do. And so how did you make that transition? Were you already doing them before the pandemic or was that something completely new to you?
Completely new.
Wow. Okay.
So what happened was business 8-9 figures to zero. Like, wow. You know, the governor says you can't bring staff into your office. It's illegal. You can't do X, Y, and Z, all the things that we did for what we did for our business, and all venues closed. So no space to host it. No one wants to be around other people. Big, huge issue, obviously, dealing with global pandemic. So we literally were faced with a situation where we were like, well, if we don't adapt and adjust and advance, we won't be here. Right. And that's, mm-hmm. the face that people had to experience. A lot of people didn't and just said, I'm going to sit and wait, because no one thought it was going to be as long as it was and is.
No.
And some people made that jump. And so my partner decided to immerse himself with a lot of education and really kind of jump into that. I actually was hesitant and was like, this sounds bizarre that we're going to take in-person to virtual. I'm not a tech person. And I thought that it was going to pass quicker. It didn't. And thankfully we did immerse ourselves. So he kind of like opened up that door and we started to go to clients and say, hey, you know, Diligent, hey, Fiverr, hey, 1-800-Flowers, the people that we had already built that good core relationship with in the real world is what I call before mm-hmm. pandemic, and say, you guys need to do something. Are you willing to take the jump with us? And we'll create movies and kind of like theater experiences where you're like opening acts and welcoming people, you know, from kind of a virtual sense. So that was kind of the approach that we took. We were fortunate that people also didn't want to be left behind. And they also knew that there was importance of like community, bringing their staff together. People were remote. all throughout different countries now, right? Because people were stuck in different mm-hmm. areas, working from different places. And so it gave us actually an interesting creative freedom and flexibility to reinvent or create something that hadn't been done. So, you know, Broadway was closed, right? So we created concepts of bringing some Broadway stars, and we put together virtual experiences, like almost like a night at the theater. You couldn't go to the theater. So thinking of it in that way, as opposed to like, hey, I'm going on a computer and I'm going to go into some chat room and I'm going to chat with people. We wanted to create those in-person experiences and really be able to offer it to everyone else.
That's great. There was one that I went on, I think, was like the Tony Robbins thing. He was one of the first like people that yes. went live with his thing, and seeing like his screen, the room with like, I don't know how many screens he had, where it was like almost like a screen for every person.
It's Zoomzilla. Literally, that's what it's called. It's literally exactly what my business partner is like, loves Tony Robbins. So the same thing. So doing those engaging, right? You saw those boxes that were sent and the engagement aspects and being able to see all the people that took innovation. You know, he even, for example, was not going to do anything.
Yeah.
He literally stumbled on, you know, the team that actually developed everything for him by chance, because he was talking to someone else and they were like, oh, I'm building the studio. And he was like, oh, I don't want to come to your studio. I want to build my own. So.
Well, all that's so expensive too, right? But I guess it's relative, because renting places and food is expensive. So you're just kind of shifting. You would have spent here in person for that. It'd be interesting now, like rolling out going forward, going back to, like you just talked about how you put together a whole huge trade event, which is unbelievable. But how this kind of hybrid of like, how you go back and incorporate where you're back in person. So the people who want to go back in person, but now you can also capture people that can't get there in person, but you're not just forgetting them because they can't get there or they don't want to get there. So how do you kind of include them too? It's a whole new market, and it's going to be interesting to see how it rolls out.
And that's a good point, because literally you're coming from like a year and 8 months where people have been able to have access. And I use the word access because we're, you know, on Zoom right now, right? We're connected and we're having access to each other. But before the pandemic hit, people only went to events really if they were local. So like, you weren't inviting your California office or your European office. You pretty much were picking and choosing. But what we've learned through the pandemic and through this virtual component is that you can incorporate both an in-person experience and a virtual. Those aren't going to look the same, managing expectations, but you can offer different aspects to each so they each feel special, as opposed to saying, well, if you're not, you can't afford to fly here, oh, well, you can't come. Mm-hmm. So giving out gift boxes, sending people kits that says, hey, have a cocktail virtually, right? Doing some kind of performance that they can engage with, or an illusionist that we can pull up people on stage and allow them to see that excitement and camaraderie, having everyone's faces on the screen really opens it up. So I think it's something that is here to stay. And if mm-hmm. companies aren't utilizing both, I think they're missing out on an opportunity that opens doors to many other things.
Right, right. You know, you definitely have some notable clients, and you've had some celebrity people come and speak at your events. Have those been just difficult to find? Have they been personal connections? Like, for people who are listening that are like, okay, I want to grow my business and I want to get to that caliber, like, do you have any insight for them?
I think treat everybody as if they're going to be that big celebrity person, because you never know who knows who knows another person that's going to connect you. Relationships are everything. I think strategic partnering is everything, like finding the person that you know has access to X, Y, and Z, and then incorporating that, befriending people that you might have thought were potentially competitors, because we all have our own unique selling proposition. And so if you approach things, every single thing that you do, you're going to have doors opening. And that's literally what happened. Was we were doing a pandemic. During the pandemic, the world closed, right? And our community was pretty much halted. Events, they can't do it, right? So my partner and I were talking. We said, well, what can we do to support people? Because people were calling and saying, well, what are you doing? We're like, mm-hmm. we're in the same situation you are, right? But what we realized, that there was a need. And when there's a need, there's always a solution. If you can provide a solution for people, then you can create community, then you can create business growth. So if you do that, that kind of opens up doors. So we wound up doing a virtual event completely free for our entire community. We brought on people that talked about their experiences, only positive elements, right? We didn't really want to make it depressing. And we showed what people were experiencing and what they were doing to adapt. So now you're offering tools to people that can go around and apply that to their business. Those are the pieces that whether you're in a pandemic, virtual or in person, as long as you can always continue to give to your community and show that you're there and reliable, your business is going to grow.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I love that. It's true. It's about always about giving because you never know where it's going to take you, right? And, and I liked how you said how you treat everyone equally.
That's
huge. It's really important. Okay. You also talked about how you started during the pandemic, like a women's organization, a community. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So we had always talked about prior to the pandemic about doing something that related to women, entrepreneurs, and giving people access. With the pandemic, we also were getting, you know, we have a big network. We were getting inquiries saying like, hey, can you help me with my business? Or I feel stuck, or my mindset is not the same. I feel depressed because, you know, I'm not able to socialize. Everyone was experiencing different things. And so we thought there was a need. So we did a test pilot in December of last year. And we said, let's see if people are receptive to it. And we brought together 15 high-level women. It was like Kara Golden, who's the founder of Hintwater.
Yeah, we interviewed her.
Yeah, she's like phenomenal. Like we brought different people with different expertise in the world of doing their own business, whether they were solo entrepreneurs, business people that sold their businesses, blah, 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 blah. So we brought together that. We gave education. And we said, what's their feedback? And people really were receptive to it. So what we did is we do like these series of events, which are virtual, and we bring together high-level speakers and really give people education for a certain amount of time, 3 days, 7 days, 10 days. And we launched a women's entrepreneur program, which we had offered before for private clients, but we had never really done it in a group setting. And so we did that and helps people get back on track, helps them get insight, turning a side hustle to their full time. How do you transition? So it allowed them to kind of have, like I say, the access to people that maybe they couldn't have and be able to hear insight, because you don't know until you know, right? You can't learn if you're in a box. So how do you give people the ability to kind of learn from others?
That's true. So I don't know if you know this or not, but the statistic that only 1.7% of women who have their own companies ever reach $1 million in sales. Not to put you on the spot, but if you were to name a couple of things or one reason why you think some women, and also just in general, right? Most businesses don't make it. So that aside, but if you were to say one reason why someone does reach that or become successful, like some attribute, characteristic, or something that they're doing, what would it be?
I think it's persistence. I think it's being kind and empathetic. And I go back to treating everybody as if so people always joke to me and say, well, how come you took the time to call in a dinner reservation for two people? Is there revenue there? No, right? I did it because that call might be for somebody who's important in a business, like a CEO of Columbia Records or so forth, right? And that call will take care of them at that time. But they'll remember that. So it's always going above and beyond. And I find that people are more transactional where they feel like I'm doing X and I'm getting this. And that I think halts people's businesses. You have to think of it as forget about the dollars. It's not about today. It's what will it be down the road? Will that person remember that you went above and beyond for them when you didn't have to? And they do. And you get referrals from them. And that's, I think, how our business kind of keeps growing. And it, you know, it has exceeded, you know, what you just said in revenue wise. And I tend to believe that it's because of that.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever read the book, The Go-Giver?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's exactly what this is about.
Oh, it is?
It's kind of like a parable. It's not like a real life story, but it's a guy who like writes a book and it's kind of, he talks about that. He's like, I read it so long ago, but he was like an insurance salesman. And he talks about like why one guy doesn't do well and one doesn't. And it all comes down to like, just always be giving and thinking about how you can give, because that is going to serve you in the long run more than what you're going to, if you're in a take it mindset.
Yeah. I think that the take it mindset no longer works. I think it might have worked years ago, but people see through it.
See through it, totally.
And that's, I think, the core thing, right? Is like, what's your foundation? Some people are like, I'm a 9-to-5 person. Then you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. You shouldn't own your business, right? Are you going to go above and beyond? Are you going to do that stuff to make people feel special and warm and remember you? And that's where the growth comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you don't care about the dollar.
Yep, that's true. Now, most of the events that you do in person, are they mostly New York City or do you do them around the world?
So it's around the world. I just came back from Boston for like a 3-day charity event. So it really just depends on what the client's needs are. We'll have clients that say, hey, can you do an offsite retreat? We're going to Miami, we're going to Arizona, we're going here, we're going there. And so we can do that. We are based in New York, but we can go wherever the desire and need is.
That just to me seems so mind-boggling, like how you keep your finger on like what's like hip and new and everywhere around the world. It's like, how do you have like a travel agency or somebody who's helping you, or is that what you guys do on your own as well?
So we represent about 100 spaces in New York. A lot of the spaces do have other properties. So like a lot of people in New York have Miami or California and other cities and so forth. But ultimately, it's okay to ask. So if I don't know, I'm going to go to someone who I think is like that expert in that area, and I will make that ask. Can you help me? Can I partner with you? Can I cut you into this project to do A, B, and C? Or do the research on my own if I feel like I'm comfortable and just dive into it.
Okay. So not to harp on a negative, but is there any like time out of any events? Because we all know like things go wrong badly fast. Is there any event that you've been like, oh my God, the place burned down or whatever, and how you overcome it? Like one time, one of my business ideas at a business goal was working with photographers, because this is a time there was no internet with, there was no like wedding list, whatever. So I was going around and trying to get wedding photographers like to work with online and get their photos online and all that. So one of those, she was like a premier wedding photographer. I think she charged $25,000 every wedding, even though it was 20 years ago. And I was like, I asked her that question once and she was like, oh my gosh, I had the film. It was in my pocket and the wedding was just over and I went to flush the toilet and they all fell down into the toilet and they went. She's like, all the photos from the entire wedding were gone.
How did she handle that?
I know, right? She's like went out and she just had to apologize and obviously gave him the money back. But like, that was it. All the photos from the entire person's wedding that they can't get back were gone. I was like, oh my God. So it would stress me to do events because I feel like there's just things that are, you're just always putting out fires.
I think the main thing is, right? Even when something goes wrong is for no one to know, because your run of show, you know, like your back of house timeline or, you know, BO for like banquet event orders and so forth, no one sees them except for like a few people. And the majority are not clients, right? They're usually your one point of contact and then back of house. So as long as you can come up with a solution, and I think anything is fixable. So something happens with one entrance, go through another, right? Something happens with one setup, it backs up, come up with a solution. As long as you're always forward thinking like that, then I think that you'll never really have a problem. It's really when you panic, right? So I'll give you an example. We were in Boston this weekend doing a run walk and 7:30 at night, I get a text message. Hey, we need 3 wheelchairs. I'm like, 3 wheelchairs for what? They're like, for tomorrow's event, starts at 8 a.m. So it turned out that a few of the donors were bringing family members. They couldn't walk. They were sick. And we needed to get wheelchairs. So clearly you can't rent wheelchairs at 7:30 at night on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? I'm going to call the hospitals. It was like a joke. They were like, there's no way you're going to be able to cold call into a hospital and convince someone to give you 3 wheelchairs. And I did. Yeah. It wasn't one hospital. It took like 3. And I said my spiel of why it was important and how they weren't going to miss the wheelchairs for a few hours. And I was able to get it. So if you go with the mindset of I can solve a problem, it might not be the path that you originally thought, then I believe you'll always land on your feet.
Yeah, it's totally true. You just got to always believe it's going to work out and just, it's a game. How are you going to get there?
Yeah, it's like a jigsaw puzzle.
Totally. Okay. So just to end, is there anything or any advice for other female entrepreneurs that are listening, you know, who are either thinking about doing this or, you know, starting their own company or they're in the throes of it and they're like, well, why am I doing this?
So I think that being an entrepreneur, starting your own business is not for the weak. I think you have to recognize that it'll be 24/7 and be committed to understanding that you'll be able to have breaks, but like you have to go all in and say to yourself, is that something that I want to embark on? It's not for everybody, right? It's okay to work for a good company and leave when you leave and check off. So being understanding who you are so that you can make the right decisions for yourself and know where your weaknesses are. So I don't like to like edit stuff. I'm more in person, right? I don't like to do run of shows that are very tactical. I can speak it, but I don't like to get into those things. So I'm going to have a team around me that likes to do those pieces and being aware of what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are so that you're not sitting there driving yourself crazy. And it's okay if you can't afford to hire those people full time. You don't have to. Everybody can be a strategic partner and provide value, and you just work out those structures. So just kind of understanding that umbrella would be really helpful.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you so much, Erica. I really appreciate your time. This has been great.
Thank you so much.
I've learned a lot, and I'm just enamored that you can pull off all of these. I think I'd be stressed every night.
No, if you have to love it. Yeah, totally. And I mean, if anyone has any questions or wants to, you know, follow up on a question, I'm happy to share.
What's the name of your women's group if someone wants to join?
Yeah, it's womeninsidernetwork.com.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Badass CEO. To get your copy of the top 10 tips every entrepreneur should know, go to thebadassceo.com/tips. Also, please leave a review as it helps others find us. If you have any ideas or suggestions, I would love to hear them. So email me at mimi@thebadassceo.com. See you next week, and thank you for listening.